Welcome to the Live Up podcast, where we revisit the movies from our youth to see if they live up. Quick note on how this episode will go. We'll review, discuss, and score whether the movie in question lives up to us now as adults and whether it lives up to its intended audience today. You can find us at Live Up Pod on all the socials. Please leave a review and like us on the platform of your choice. That's super, super helpful. And now we can start. I'm Jess Latterman.
And I'm Amanda Treat. On today's episode, it's the beginning of our Halloween spooktacular. It's 1988's Beetlejuice. Since I'm only trying to say his name twice in this segment.
I almost said it two more times after you said Beetlejuice.
Jess, you selected this movie. What is your history with Beetlejuice?
So this is one I was convinced I'd seen in the theater, but I didn't. Or at least that's what my brother confirmed. It was in heavy rotation in our house. I mean, we watched this all the time. It was definitely an active choice. It wasn't one of those rerun on TBS. Like, this was one where...
No, it's not Troop Beverly Hills.
It is not, sadly. or Overboard, or Coming to America. So this is one we either got from the library. We might have even owned it. I'm pretty sure we owned a VHS copy of this one. Loved it. I mean, every time I see Michael Keaton now in anything else, including, it could be anything from like Batman to Spotlight, this is the role that I think about. But for Beetlejuice itself, I should mention, I've seen the Broadway version of this now that it's on Broadway. So in DC, a lot of times Broadway comes here first with the Broadway cast. They kind of work on some things before it goes to New York. So I had seen it in 2018 and it was pretty good. They were really true to the movie, except I think they focused a lot more on Lydia and her family versus like the Alec Baldwin, Gina Davis character. And they play Lydia, like they turn her teen angst into rock anthems and it's kind of awesome. So yeah.
Okay.
So I've seen this.
I'm skeptical about a musical version of this, but I believe you.
I mean, honestly, you should be. I mean, I can't say it's the greatest thing I've ever seen, but I was surprised that it wasn't terrible. I should say that.
Yes. We have hit a whole new bar here.
Surprised it wasn't terrible.
Surprised it wasn't terrible.
But that's how much I like this movie, is that when I had the chance to go see it, a musical version of it, I jumped at it and I was excited to see it. I did watch this with my kids because I was like, oh no, this one I think they'll like. So that was kind of fun. So, but what is your history with this movie? And I assume it does not include the Broadway show.
No, I, like you, definitely did not see this in the theater. It was Tim Burton's second big movie after Pee-wee's Big Adventure. Plug for previous podcasts here.
Just the last episode.
But I think our parents didn't recognize what this was and they genuinely weren't sure. Like, is this okay for kids or is this, I mean, it's a movie where people are dying and it looks like a horror movie from the trailer and from the preview poster and everything.
I did notice it was rated 13 plus and I was wondering if that had changed because I'm like, oh, definitely.
Yes. You know what that is? They snuck an F-bomb into this movie.
Yeah. Okay.
Beetlejuice yells the F word at some point and like, I'm sorry, here we go. We gotta bump it up a rating, even though like, yeah, it's silly, grotesque humor in this movie.
Yeah.
It's fun. But yeah, they swear. So PG-13 plus.
Plus.
I do remember, so this movie must have been released on HBO and I went over to my friend Megan's house to see it. And at the time I didn't know what it was. So I honestly remember feeling nervous to watch it. Because it was like, ooh, this is a movie about dead people and ghosts and hauntings and I'm going to be scared of this. And probably my only experience with ghosts at this point was Large March. So terrifying.
Terrifying. Traumatizing.
Exactly. But then like it starts up and you get a few minutes into it and realize like, yeah, this is funny. Like Adam and Barbara are very nice people. They're nice ghosts.
Yeah, maybe too nice.
Yeah, but they're like very safe tour guides through this world as a kid. Like you aren't actually scared. Like they, you know, stage their own deaths and like threaten or not threaten, but like they're pretending to murder each other in various scenes to like try to scare people. And you're kind of on their side. So you're like, oh, I hope this works. Oh, no, he cut his head off for nothing. Aw.
Aw, they ruined sheets for nothing. Yeah.
Plus, it's got all that Calypso music, which is just super cheerful. Yeah, we didn't have the VHS cassette of this, but I probably also watched it dozens of times just on TV or like from Blockbuster. It was a fun movie and we kept taking it out. I meant to ask you about this. Did you ever watch the Beetlejuice animated television show?
No, I was aware of it, but I don't think I ever watched it.
it might have been a Saturday morning cartoon that popped on for a few years, but it's really just about Beetlejuice and Lydia being like BFFs. But it's a show that's for totally younger kids.
Yeah, I was going to say, they would have to tone Beetlejuice himself down. Yeah,
no sexual jokes.
He's not trying to look up anyone's dress.
Yeah, like he's not a pervert in that show. So I think that lingered as well. So my memory of this movie is like, oh, it's fun and it's a cute dead people movie. Yay. I think the cartoon show absolutely infected my opinion of this movie a little bit, and that I thought it was more childish than it may have turned out being on this viewing.
Yeah.
Jess, for our listeners, would you like to give a recap of what Beetlejuice is about?
I would. So Beetlejuice teaches us that bureaucracy does not end with death. And the most adorable couple tries to deal with their own deaths by being terrible ghosts to an insufferable family with the worst decorating taste known to man. And we're going to have to talk about that.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God.
So funny.
So funny. But then the ghosts in their desperation bring a pervy demon into the situation and chaos ensues. Yeah, but you could also forget all that and say that it's about teen angst.
It is a lot about Lydia and her miserable existence with these weird parents.
Yeah. But the bureaucracy of death was kind of funny. It actually struck me more now that that is a big part of what it's about. And there's a lot of other things these days, like The Good Place or the Daniel Radcliffe show, The Miracle Workers, that talk about the bureaucracy of death. So there's like a whole cottage industry of like shows about this.
Yeah. There's a comment, a throwaway line in this, but one of the characters says, oh, I've heard if you commit suicide, you become a civil servant in the afterlife. And man, did they portray the civil servants in the afterlife. They hate their jobs. It's a giant like RMV. Like, oh, everyone's just waiting in line.
I know, they take a number.
There's probably ugly pictures being taken for some sort of license somewhere.
I don't think I appreciated how funny the bureaucracy of death part was as a kid. I mean, I just thought the...
Definitely went over my head.
Yeah, the whole texture of it was funny to me. Like, the idea, the suicide stuff went over my head as a kid. And yeah. It definitely, like, my eyebrows went up a little bit about all the suicide talk in this.
You're looking at everybody in that waiting room, including Miss Argentina, who's running the counter, and trying to figure out how they died. So it's like, okay, there's a guy in a sleeping bag with a rattlesnake tail sticking out of it. Like, all right, figured out what happened there. Yeah. And like, you know, you've got the magician's assistant who's been sawed in half.
Yeah.
And around the room we go, and you get to Miss Argentina. It's like, what is her deal? But when she holds up her wrists and you can see, oh, she didn't win the pageant, she killed herself, and now she's stuck at the desk in the afterlife taking all the paperwork and rolling her eyes at people like, ah. But funny. She is funny.
Yeah, it's like, as an adult, I'd say it's uncomfortably funny. But for kids, it completely goes over their heads.
As a kid, I don't remember noticing at all that anyone who commits suicide gets damned to being a civil servant for the rest of eternity. That's quite a punishment.
It would not be portrayed like that these days, because it definitely was incredibly insensitive. These days, whenever there's a story about it, people end with, and maybe we should, a hotline number to call if you're having suicidal thoughts. Whereas this movie's just like, yeah, you know, you do that and you get to be a postal worker for the rest of your eternity.
It's like, you're going to hate this. Don't do it. It's implied. I was reading up on how many rewrites this went through, and the original script of Beetlejuice was not funny. It was incredibly dark. There is a scene in this movie that they kept where Lydia is trying to kill herself, but in the original script, she dies.
Oh.
And she's living with Adam and Barbara for the rest of eternity.
Oh.
Not because she killed herself, but like in the final battle scene, like somebody kills her. And so it was like, oh man, that would have been horrible.
Horrible ending. It was a good move to change this.
Oh my God.
And I'll say that even my kids articulated, they liked the ending. It made them feel better. Like, I mean, just for listeners who don't remember, it all kind of ends in a compromise where, you know, the ghosts all kind of learn to live with the new family and there's compromises made. And Lydia's treat, instead of dying, I guess.
That's my sister's actual name, by the way, Lydia Treat.
Her sister's name is Lydia. Where she gets to be like possessed and sing and dance, sort of like the Deo scene is sort of like a fun treat. And like you kind of end the movie with her singing and dancing and smiling
to fly
and having a good
sing
time.
Harry Belafonte. It's awesome.
Yeah.
With her backup dancers at that football team.
Right? Yeah. And my my daughter noted that. That's something she liked about the movie. And I think for kids, I think it makes them feel a little bit better that it ends okay. Not that you always have to have a soft landing for kids, but even as an adult, I think that that would have been a totally different movie.
I think our memories of this are, wow, what a fun movie. Exactly. Like, there are topics explored here. It's all about death.
That's true. Yeah.
Actually, the one other script rewrite that I thought was interesting, and I'm glad they ended it the way they did, but there was a version of this where at the end, the compromise is that Adam and Barbara get shrunk down to the model village and that they live in their entire house, but in the model village, which is like put off to the side in the attic. So the Dietzes have the whole house and then they have the whole house and they're completely separate, but tiny.
Yeah.
I don't know. I could see that kind of being interesting, but at the same time, I think it's nicer that they like learn to live together.
I do too. I do too. I think that was, I think it was a better ending.
Ghosts can be your friends, not foes.
Yeah. They could be nerdy and fun.
Oh my God. These are the nerdiest ghosts ever.
Nerdiest ghosts in the world.
We should probably dive right in and start talking about
our nerdy ghosts.
We'll talk about the ghost couple together. We've got Adam. We've got Barbara. Adam played by Alec Baldwin, who looks like he fell out of the L.L. Bean catalog this entire movie. And we've got Barbara played by Gina Davis, who I love this character, but oh, this hideous cottagecore prairie dress they've got her in the whole movie. I hate her outfit so much in this movie.
I love your fashion commentary. I've been waiting for you to notice what I'm wearing, by the way.
Oh, she's dressed like Adam. I did not notice. Oh, no.
Yeah, he is out of an L.L. Bean catalog.
Are you in like some knockoff Eddie Bauer Target bullshit? What is that?
I don't even know what brand I'm wearing, but so for listeners, I am wearing Alec Baldwin's shirt.
She looks like Adam. She's dressed like the character for this episode.
I am.
I didn't notice. You're kind of dressed like Large Marge a little bit.
Oh, yeah, I could. I know. Honest. If I put on a trucker hat and, yeah, you know Large Marge was gay. But anyway.
Oh, God, yes.
Totally.
Was the gayest truck driver I'd ever seen.
Oh, my God. You're going to traumatize me now. Oh, listen.
All right. Switch Tim Burton movies.
Switch Tim Burton movies. So my two thoughts when Alec Baldwin came on the screen. One, I was like, oh, my God. God, he's so young. I can't get over how young and adorable he is. And the second thought was, I have that shirt because I'm a lesbian. And those were my two thoughts.
Oh, I wish we did a video of this recording because you are seriously dressed like Adam. And I apologize for not noticing that right off the
bat. I thought you were going to comment on it, but I'll post a picture, folks. I'll post a picture. Check out our Instagram. I'll post a picture of me dressed as Adam.
Hashtag LLB.
Yeah, or could I be Adam or could I be Large Marge? Could be either way. You know, you decide. Don't pick Large Marge, please.
Oh, well, I am not wearing a hideous cottagecore prairie style dress right now, but I'm sort of regretting my choice here. Did you notice during the pandemic that style of dress came flying back and it was all over Instagram? People were like taking photos of themselves with chickens in these dresses they bought at Target. It was so stupid looking.
I don't know why that choice was. I mean, because her character was great. The Gina Davis playing Barbara.
She's a kick-ass character. And I swear to God, I don't think they dress like that. And I know it's supposed to be Connecticut. People didn't dress like that in Connecticut. But like, as a New Englander, I do not recall people looking that awful.
They portray Connecticut like it's some backwater.
Oh my God, yeah.
I don't think this is what people's current view of Connecticut is.
This is all a giant suburb of New York City. People don't dress like this.
People don't dress like that. They talk about how their house, they could sell it for the expensive $244,000. And I'm like, oh my God, you can't buy a parking space in Connecticut for that.
No. And they filmed this movie in Vermont, so I don't know why they couldn't just say, hey, we're in Vermont.
Yeah.
It looks like Vermont.
It does look like Vermont.
Little covered bridges and the little towns.
But back to Barbara and Adam, who I am dressed
like.
And
their fashion choices. The outfit you die in, are you wearing that for all eternity if you're haunting people? And does that encourage you to dress better? Because it could be forever.
I mean,
like if you're throwing on a pair of Crocs and like sweatpants and you're running out like that and you get hit by a bus, is that your eternity outfit? Could you be stuck in Crocs for eternity?
But I'd rather be in Crocs than heels. I mean, what would be the worst is if you were a bridesmaid in some uncomfortable dress and that's it.
Ooh, with a butt bow. Oh my God.
Oh God, that'd be the worst.
You could be stuck in a butt bow for eternity. Oh, we found a new low.
We did. We found a new low. I'd rather wear whatever the fuck Gina Davis is wearing in this than that. But
all right. So cottagecore prairie dress is not the worst case scenario.
It's not the worst case. But they're like the nerdiest couple. They're so adorable.
They're so dorky.
So dorky, but I kind of loved it.
Yeah, I mean, they're so excited to take a vacation and just stay at home for 2 weeks and redecorate. I'm missing a redecorating montage from this movie, although it wouldn't have fit in because Tim Burton would have done some fucked up thing to it. But the idea of they're going to stay home and paint a lot of things, and that's their vacation. They're just like over the moon about it. Like, oh, so looking forward to this. Let's go to the hardware store. Oh,
no, it was kind of, they're charming. They're adorable together. They have great chemistry. Like, the two actors have great chemistry. And I just loved how he was sort of like this, even though he's not a dad, he was like this charming, nerdy dad. He's a terrible ghost. He doesn't even have it in him. He struggles with all that scary shit.
I love that they just don't want to hurt anybody when they're haunting.
I know.
Like, that's a big thing. Keep saying that, like, we just don't want them to get hurt. You know, we just want to scare them, but nobody should get hurt here.
Yeah.
Which... it's silly.
It is silly. And even my kids, especially my son, who's six, was confused. It's like when they were basically in the plot, folks don't remember, they're pretending to haunt the new people, the Catherine O'Hara character and
the Dietzes.
The Dietz
family.
Because they want them out of there. And they come up with the dumbest things, like sheets on their heads. And it's kind of charming. But even my son was sort of confused. He's like, what? He didn't even understand that they're trying to haunt.
It does seem like, you know, people who aren't exposed to a lot of horror movies who have to figure out how to haunt people for the first time. Yeah. Like, you know, you're going to make some mistakes. So sheets... floral sheets, I might add, like very 1980s floral sheets.
Yeah, I know, they keep talking about them as high-end sheets. I'm like, those are the ugliest things I've ever seen in my
those
life.
Those look hideous sheets. Hideous. Yeah. Very 1980s, though, for those floral bedrooms, so if you're dancing around in one.
Like Elizabeth Shue.
Another throwback. Check out our plug for
Adventures
in Babysitting podcast episode here.
Mm-hmm. I kind of related to both of them more as an adult. As a kid, I think I really liked them, and I think you said they're safe tour guides through this whole thing. I loved Alec Baldwin's nerdiness as Adam, and I kind of related to Gina Davis's sort of mother hen relationship with Lydia, where she, you know, gets really attached to Lydia and she doesn't want to leave her.
Yeah.
Ends up not wanting to kick out the Dietzes because she doesn't want to lose that relationship with Lydia. So I kind of related to that more as an adult and found them even more endearing. But it wasn't all just, I mean, this is a Tim Burton movie, so it's fucked up. So it's, it's not all lovey-dovey. But I guess I could say that they thought that she had a little bit more depth than I remember as a kid, for sure.
Yeah, no, and there's a quick line right at the beginning as they're leaving for the hardware store about, you know, oh, we couldn't have kids, but like, maybe we'll try again. And they're both just so optimistic about every friggin' thing. So they're cute. They're really cute.
Yeah, I miss the whole, like, we'll try again.
So I do love Barbara, especially of the pair of the two of them, because she's super smiley and optimistic and nice, but like, she's got the gumption. Like, she's the one who's always coming up either with the plan that probably backfires and isn't that great, but you know, she's thinking through things here. She's the one who calls Beetlejuice the first time. She's looking at Adam like, should I do it? And he's like, yeah, you do it.
Yeah, she kind of wears the pants.
She punches a sandworm in the face. It's very quick, but like, and then at the end of it, she like rides one on to save the day. Like, Adam is like a nice guy and he's trying very hard, but like, when it comes to the moment where they have to take action, like, he crashes like a miniature car into someone's
foot.
And
there's like the tiniest little burst of flame that's super like cute. It's like a cute little burst.
He does that and she comes through the ceiling riding a motherfucking sandworm.
I know, that was kind of awesome. And
saves the day. Yeah, she wins the movie ultimately. But I just think she being the character of Barbara, but also just Gina Davis's performance as Barbara is really, really good. Like, you can see it in her face.
Yeah, she's great.
Is going to kick some ass when the time comes. And I love that.
Yeah, and at the ending, it's she rides a sandworm, and the sandworm essentially, like, eats Beetlejuice. Like, she saves everybody. She saves Lydia from having to marry Beetlejuice, which is a whole weird side plot. She basically makes it all okay. It's really from her that it all works out in the end. And you would never know it from that weirdo Mormon dress she's wearing. I don't even know. Like, she kind of, like, presents as meek in terms of like her appearance, but you're totally right. She's kind of a badass.
We like badass heroines in this podcast.
Absolutely. We like strong female characters, and when they come in and they go toe to toe, and she's definitely one of them. And surprising, because like I don't think I remembered her as one. Like, let's say we remember a Marion Ravenwood. I didn't really remember, you know, Barbara as anything other than like a weird mom kind of figure.
Yeah, I think in my head, Barbara and Adam kind of blurred together.
Yeah.
That they were just like the nice people who are like terrible at being ghosts, but like, you know, good neighbors to have in your attic or whatever.
Yeah, I definitely appreciated her. I mean, she's a great actress. I mean, she's like, as we were just saying before we started recording, nominated for 2 Oscars, won 1 Oscar. I mean, she's really great. And she's still a force in Hollywood in terms of a producer and, you know, equality for women and all that stuff. But she's great in this. Like, kind of somewhat of a heart of this movie that I'm sure we picked up on as kids but didn't really know it. But it definitely shone through when I watched it again as an adult. And it's interesting, just the Broadway show kind of just sort of puts Adam and Barbara in the background. Like, they're in it, but they're not the same kind of heart of the show. Oh. It's really all about Lydia's relationship. But I kind of get it, because I do think there's a really nuanced performance you have to do that probably doesn't translate to a musical here. But and her grief over not having kids, you kind of see it in the film. Yes. It doesn't overtake her character.
She connects with Lydia very quickly, and not in like an overbearing kind of way, but it's subtle. And yeah, I definitely didn't notice any of that when I was a kid, but we're noticing it now. On the side, I hope that her audition for Thelma and Louise, when they're like, do you think you'd look cool with a gun? She just walks in and goes, well, I punched a sandworm in my last movie. So
yeah, fuck you.
I'll have you. Have you check my work. Go see my reel. I punched a sandworm.
You know, Gina Davis isn't in a ton of things I've seen recently. So I kind of enjoyed. And good God, she looks so young in this. Just like Alec Baldwin. She does. It's unbelievable. They're babies.
They're so young.
But, you know, we're old as fucking dirt.
Oh, speaking of so young, Winona Ryder. I think this is the first movie I ever saw Winona Ryder in.
I think I looked up that she was 17 when she filmed this.
Oh my God.
Maybe 18.
And she became America's sweetheart so fast. So Winona Ryder plays Lydia Dietz, the goth teenage daughter. I'm not sure how old she's supposed to be, because they refer to her as the little girl a couple of times.
Do.
It's like, she's not that little, though. But I think she's supposed to be maybe 14, 15.
Yeah, probably tween.
Maybe.
Little, like, early teenager.
Too young to marry, Beetlejuice.
Getting in statutory rape territory there, but, you know, okay.
Oh, big time.
Yeah.
Ugh. But he's gross.
Super gross.
We'll talk about him in a minute. So this is a cool character, and Winona Ryder does an awesome job playing it. I would say I saw this when I was so young that I didn't quite latch onto her teenage cynicism and her macabre attitudes the same way like Christina Ricci's Wednesday spoke to my soul.
I knew Wednesday was going to come up.
I know. I do love this character, though. Like, she's a lot of sass and eye rolls and like what ultimately would be the whole attitude of the 1990s, portrayed as like goth artsy daughter who's running around with her camera, but like is actually just looking for nice people to connect to, and she's got Adam and Barbara living up in her attic, so perfect.
Yeah, and like the Catherine O'Hara character who plays, it's very clear that she's her stepmom, and which is a whole other dynamic. But just to clarify for the folks who don't remember, this movie doesn't really get into the family drama as much. It's more for humor and scene setting there. I'm not surprised that you compared her to Wednesday, because she looks like Wednesday, by the way, and that just you prefer...
Very goth.
Clearly, I mean, of course you prefer Wednesday Addams, because another plug to listeners for our Addams Family episode, like Amanda is Wednesday Addams, so that's just what it is. I did have a conversation with Lily, my daughter, who's 11. My daughter is a fan of the Wednesday series, and Tim Burton directed that series, and you can kind of see there's an aesthetic, like... Lydia's character looks Wednesday. She looks like the Wednesday that's in the Netflix series now. And, you know, Lily articulated that they're very similar in terms of their attitude as teenager. But Lily noted, she's like, actually, they're really different. Wednesday likes the gory stuff and Lydia doesn't. Like, she doesn't really like the bugs and the yucky things, but they're just as...
Yeah.
She picked up on that they're just as dark, but that Wednesday is like a whole other, like, almost supernatural level dark.
Like prissy goth Is that Lydia? She's a little prissy.
For... I guess prissy goth. That's funny. But you know what, though? I think she's a more realistic goth.
I think she is, too. No, I mean, the Addams Family, those people are not.
Yeah, that's not normal. That's ridiculous. It gets into, like, yeah, absurd category there. But she does look like Jenna Ortega, whatever her name is, from the Wednesday
series. So, wait. Did you know they're making a Beetlejuice 2?
I did. I'm excited.
Do you know who's playing Lydia's daughter?
Jenna Ortega.
Oh my God. It comes full circle. Wednesday Addams is Lydia's daughter.
So does she play Lydia's daughter? Okay. That'll be...
She's going to be playing Lydia's daughter. That'll be good. Like, we've got 50-something-year-old Winona Ryder still playing Lydia, and now she's got Jenna Ortega as... She's currently being credited as Lydia's daughter, but I'm sure she's got... Some funny, I'm sure.
It'd be funny, like Thursday.
I just haven't released, but it is it. Oh my God, it would be so funny if it was Thursday. Thursday Dietz.
She's a great teen angst character, and she has amazing lines. I mean, her darkness is more relatable to me than Wednesday. I feel like I related to Lydia more than Wednesday. And she says things like, my whole life is a dark room. When she's talking about her photography, you know, that I myself am strange and unusual. It's a great lines for...
She's so dramatic. So dramatic. And yeah, it's perfect for a goth teen.
But it's also just perfect for a teen. Just like, I don't fit in. Like, things are weird, but I'm kind of special because I could see dead
I'm dead special people. Yeah, I'm a teenager.
She's great, and I loved this character.
She's really, really good here. I mean, because we spent our entire childhoods kind of looking up to Winona Ryder, and I think it was just literally the age difference. Like, she's a bit older than we are, so when I was watching Lydia for the first time, I was like, oh, look at that older teenager acting like this. Or then when we became teenagers, it was like, oh, look at this Reality Bites college graduate who's still super cynical and snarky about the world. Oh, awesome. Love Winona.
I think even watching with my kids, the Lydia character definitely translates to another generation. It's not dated at all. The only thing that I think was like a little on the dark side is sort of the suicide fascination. And she, you know, there's a scene in the movie where Lydia is writing out essentially a suicide note. And they kind of then, you know, obviously she doesn't, you know, partly because Barbara intervenes.
Yeah, that she wants to hang out with Barbara and Adam and not her parents. And that's part of it.
Yeah.
They don't really take enough of a, like, hey, teens, if you're feeling like Lydia is, but here's a number you can call. Like, they don't go that route.
I mean, this is a Tim Burton movie, not a PSA. So, you know.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, like, they give the reason for it, and then they show, like, you don't have to do this. There's another way to, like, be able to hang out with them all the time. And
yeah, I was...
That's their solution for it. But, yeah, it is... handled differently because this is 1988, not today.
It is handled differently, and it handled so directly that as a parent then watching it with my kids, it sort of like caught me off guard because I forgot about it because as a kid, I guess I knew it and I remembered it, but I didn't really feel the depth of it until watching it now as an adult. And I do think kids these days can feel the depth of it more so than, let's say, you and I could have at that age. It's an interesting introduction to it, watching it with a preteen, or if listeners out there watch it with their kids. It's not bad. Just kind of know that it's there, and it just sort of shows up without any warning. And there's not gentle treatment of suicidal thoughts in this movie. But I'd say that was the only thing that was jarring to me about her character. But I loved how much disdain she has for her stepmom. And it's just delicious.
Yeah. Spot on. Well, all right, let's talk about her stepmom, because I remember as a kid being like, ooh, this mom is terrible, and not thinking anything of it. But now watching this as an adult, it's Catherine O'Hara from Schitt's Creek and everything else.
Home
all
Alone,
those.
I mean, Christopher Guest movies.
Oh, God. Like, I didn't notice how funny she was when I was a kid. Watching this as an adult, she was killing it.
Killing it.
And it's so good. She comes in as the artsy stepmom. Her art is questionably terrible. It's very Tim Burton.
I wouldn't even call it questionably terrible. I mean, it is, everything about her is avant-garde gone wrong. It's just, what the hell is happening there?
I mean, okay, we've been complaining about the clothing that Barbara and Adam are wearing. She is repurposing clothing into the weirdest, distracting things you've ever seen. Like, she's got a pair of gloves tied around her head as a headband at one point. She, and it's subtle, she takes her husband's sweater that he was wearing in the previous scene and is wearing them as pants. So she is like, red sweater, pants. So
fucking weird.
Just like, what is she doing? Like, she's artsy. Oh my God.
But her clothes, and like, they don't even have an era associated with them. They're just like, I want to say they're 80s.
They're just Tim Burton. They're a Tim Burton wardrobe.
So weird.
Gone wrong.
There's a lot of a.
So weird.
Insert a descriptor here. Gone wrong with her yeah. attitude, oh. with her art, with her clothes, with. But she's just phenomenal. I mean, in some ways, you could see hints of her Schitt's Creek character in here.
Oh my God. Yeah. All I could see when she's wearing a pair of gloves on her head, I was so just good. Like, oh my God, it's like all those wigs she's wearing on Schitt's Creek. And yeah, she's subtly building her way up to being this completely crazy character.
I just didn't appreciate how well written her character was. She's so funny, or how great Catherine O'Hara is in it, because she doesn't quite fit in anywhere. Like, she clearly doesn't fit into the art world. She doesn't fit into the backwater Connecticut world, and she doesn't fit into this family, but you kind of don't care because she's such an asshole. She's such a wannabe. She's trying to be, when Otho, the, I don't even know who the fuck Otho is. Is he a decorator? Is he a family friend?
He's the gay bestie. He's terrible.
Oh my God. He's the gay bestie who, you're right. He's the gay bestie who's the worst. He has the worst taste in the world. But you know.
Though he has that great line. He's like, I know just as much about the supernatural as I do about interior design. And it's like crickets start chirping.
It's so good. But she's such a wannabe because she'll say something like, you know, about redecorating the house, and Otho's like, you read my mind. And she just is so craving that kind of attention and validation.
Yes, she really, really wants to impress him.
She does. But so I found it just so funny, her wannabe nature, because she's not really that much of a villain.
She's coming in with this attitude of like know-it-allism and like, I hate this country aesthetic so much. And she's got my favorite line that I was like, ooh, we see future Catherine O'Hara performances right here. There's a scene where she whips around and yells at her husband, if you don't let me gut this house and remodel, I will go insane. And she delivers it with literal insanity. And I was just there's Catherine O'Hara. Like, she's so good at this.
She's so good at this. And there's a scene where they're getting ready to host that dinner party prior to the Deo banana.
Oh my God. Scene. She's got so much food just chopping all over that island.
And she has the knife, like, and she's just like, chop, 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 chop. And you know, she looks like a psychopath. Lydia is trying to convince her there's ghosts in the house and we should, you know.
She has the photographs in the right. scene, just trying to show her black and white photos.
And Delia, or whatever her name is, thinks that Lydia is trying to scare her. But you know, Lydia's not. She's just trying to share, you know, she's trying to connect with her on some level. And Delia's like, the only thing that scares me is to be embarrassed in front of people willing to set foot in Connecticut. And I'm like, it is such a well-delivered line and something that I never would have found funny as a kid. But I, as an adult, I laughed.
I want Connecticut to put that on their state sign, like when you cross the border from New York. The only thing that scares me is to be embarrassed in front of people who are willing to set foot in Connecticut.
That should totally be their state motto. What are they thinking?
Oh, have Catherine O'Hara like cut a ribbon in front of the first state sign so that has good. It written on
so
it.
So good.
Oh, she's so good in this movie. I did not notice how good she was when we were kids. Like, she just seemed like an evil stepmom, but she's so funny.
Oh God. I mean, amazing. I loved every second of that she was on screen as an adult.
Yeah.
Yeah. Loved
so,
it.
Did you see in my notes who they almost cast? This was going to be an Angelica Houston character.
No way. Okay.
As Delia Dietz. They signed her on to the project. She got sick. She couldn't do it. And then they brought Catherine O'Hara in.
Okay. Here's the thing. That would have been amazing.
Because we've established that she's actually very funny. Like, her performance in The Addams Family is nuanced and hilarious. And I think she would have been like a ditzier version of this character. I think she would have done like the delivery that she does in The Addams Family, where like these nonchalant lines are just delivered. And
that's right.
She's saying ridiculous things. It would have been really funny, but Catherine O'Hara crushes this character.
Catherine O'Hara crushes this character, but the only actress in existence who could have equally crushed it, or maybe crushed it more.
It would have been a totally different totally different character.
Oh,
if Angelica Houston had done it, it would have been really funny though.
Yeah, not to side tangent on Angelica Houston, but when she played the evil stepmom in Ever After, when Drew Barrymore played Cinderella, yes. She played it amazing. Good movie. So it's if you kind of mixed her Addams Family with her Ever After performance, I mean, yeah. I would watch that movie.
That would be great.
Great. And she was imprinted so in my memory, even from as a kid. I thought she was so funny. And she actually doesn't have a ton of screen time, but she made her screen time extremely memorable. And I'm sure anyone of our generation thinks that she's in every scene.
She, I thought, also was so nuanced because despite how she's like this driving force through the household, we're going to tear the whole house down and rebuild it back up in this avant-garde style, and she's just got crazy art all over the place. But you really see her insecurities. She brings her, I think he's her art dealer, I'm not sure. And like he insults her in that one scene. It's like, you're a flake, your art is terrible. And you see her be hurt by it. Like she isn't secure in her place. And like that totally went over my head as a kid too. It's like she's trying to be such a confident power woman, but she's like really hurting a lot. Stuck in this family dynamic where her husband is kind of being a wet blanket, and she's got this teenage stepdaughter who doesn't like her at all, and she's drugging herself to sleep every night. Like she's,
as Lydia would put it, that she's sleeping with Prince Valium tonight.
Yes, Prince Valium.
Which is another great line.
That was such a funny line delivered so well by Winona Ryder, and kind of summed up a lot of like the late 80s like ethos of housewives. Like, yeah, she's also sleeping with Prince Valium. He gets around.
It's hard to be sympathetic to her, though, because she also is the one where as soon as the people that come to the dinner party think that the fact that the house is haunted is cool, she's like, oh, I knew all about the haunting. And of course we knew it was cool. I mean, she's just such a wannabe.
Well, that's her whole thing.
Okay. So before we dive into Beetlejuice, who, just to give it away, you know, is beside the point in this movie, but whatever. I want to address the
iconic scene.
He's
the main character. Whatever.
Yeah, whatever. The movie's named after him. Whatever. So there's an iconic scene we keep referring to in this. I'm calling it the Deo scene, the banana boat song possession. For folks who don't remember, this is the scene where the ghosts, Alec Baldwin and Gina Davis's character, they've gone through the bureaucracy waiting room and they're basically told, you know, you got to just deal with this yourselves, people. And they think it's a brilliant idea that instead of trying to call Beetlejuice up, they're going to possess everybody in the room into like basically doing a choreographed dance of, what is it called? The banana boat song. And that's going to scare
everyone
away.
Everyone knows this song.
Harry
Belafonte. Day-o.
Right. As the scene was about to happen, I was like super excited. And I should have mentioned now that Elena, my wife, has never seen this movie, which was
Really?
So before
a banana
started,
boat? Would you say it's a banana boat that she hasn't seen this movie?
Crazy. So before the scene started, I just had to turn and be like, I'm like, this is the scene. I want to know your reaction to this, but I loved the scene watching it again. It was almost too short for me. My kids loved the scene. I mean, my son was reenacting it the next day. I mean, really landed with kids still. And what made it better for me as an adult watching this now was thinking about how they had to shoot that and all the actors had to pretend to be possessed. They had to pretend that they were against their will doing this choreographed dance. And, you know, they're like, you know, their arms are like, you know, flailing everywhere. And I'm like, that must have been hilarious.
Oh my God. So this scene is iconic, not just for the Deo banana boat song, but also growing up, we referred to it as the shrimp fingers.
Yeah.
That's how
I forgot about that one. Yeah.
You know exactly what I mean. Like, such an iconic scene. In the original script that I was talking about, the dark, awful script, that was not in there at all. Instead, like, they possess the vines in the rug to, like, wrap the people up and, like, throw them against the wall really hard. And it was just, like, violent. No singing and no dancing. And this is so much sillier. But when they were going to film it, I read online that it was Catherine O'Hara and Jeffrey Jones went up to Tim Burton and was like, we think this should be a Harry Belafonte song. Like, it wasn't originally Deo.
Oh.
And that it was the actors who took it to Tim Burton. Because Tim Burton, even after this movie was edited and cut, he was like, yeah, I don't know if, like, Deo is going to work there. Like, this is just not my style. I'm not totally down with this. I don't think it's funny. And like, it's so funny. And you watching Catherine O'Hara's performance here, where she's possessed and like lost control of her body, but she's making facial expressions at all of her guests. Like, what the hell is going on? Is spot on. Like, that's exactly what, like,
it's the best part.
Anybody
it's
would look
so
like.
Good. And my kids, they got it right away that they were being possessed. They thought it was hilarious. They were like, oh, first they were like, what's going on? Even Elena was like, you know, she's like, what's happening? But it's so infectiously funny. It's perfect. I mean, perfect 10 for that scene. And it is so weird. Like, if you're at a writer's room meeting and they're like, yes, we're going to do this thing, you'd be like, that sounds so stupid. But it
sounds
works.
So stupid, but it's amazing.
It's amazing.
The other thing I want to call out about this scene is the practical effects. So like this movie, classic Tim Burton style, it's got a lot of like animation over people and stop motion effects, but also a lot of practical effects. Like he loves making things look like a B movie when he can. Or so in this scene, we're going directly to the shrimp fingers here, which is so gross. So like the shrimp come to life and grab all the party guests in the face and then throw them against the wall.
Or they just kind of pull them in, I think.
Pull them in, but like there's a toss backwards. They had to shoot that scene in reverse. Like they're trying to figure out how to like pull and throw people. So they initially, like Tim Burton was like, we're going to have puppeteers and we're going to do it this way. And like, it didn't look right. So then they were like, what if we shoot the actors like coming and going in the opposite direction?
Oh, interesting. That's brilliant.
Yeah. So they shot it and then reversed it on the film. And that's what we're seeing. So it does look a little supernatural. Like they're getting sucked into the shrimp and then thrown against the wall. And that's, yeah, that's all backwards. And so stuff like that, like little hacks like that gets around like the need for really big special effects or visual effects. Like they just innovated there. And I love when they come up with ideas like that. And it just looks weird and cool and awesome.
It's so weird and cool and awesome. And it resonated with my kids. It resonated with me again. And I could watch that scene all day. It's so funny. And I encourage listeners, like, if you're not going to rewatch the movie, just appreciate that scene. It's so fun. And
it's great.
One thing that I forgot is that in the plot of the movie is that the guests are not scared by this. They're actually, they transition from what the fuck to, you know, oh, this is the coolest thing ever. You have a haunted house that like you can get possessed and start singing. So I missed that whole part of the plot as a kid. Oh, you're always worried when you rewatch these movies. Are the iconic scenes going to be like what you remember?
Are they going to live up?
Yeah, yeah. Like, is Large Marge still going to be scary? Are the Gartham and Dark Crystal still going to be scary?
Yes and yes.
Are certain things still going to strike you in the same way? And this one almost over-delivered because it was sort of fun because I was the only one in the room re-watching this that had seen this before. And the enjoyment was there for everybody.
Nice. Oh, I'm glad they liked it.
Yeah. But the funny thing also I didn't realize as a kid is that this scene has nothing to do with Beetlejuice, the character. No. Gina Davis and Alec Baldwin's character, they do this on their own. And it's only after the people aren't scared and they love it that they kind of succumb to thinking that they need Beetlejuice's help. So you're actually like pretty far into the movie before Beetlejuice even comes on the scene.
Yeah. So as I was rewatching this, paused at the 45 minute mark, which was about halfway to go get, you know, another bowl of popcorn and realized he hasn't been in the movie yet. Like we're halfway through this movie and there's really been no Beetlejuice scenes at all. Beetlejuice, Michael Keaton, is only in this movie for 17 minutes.
Get out of here.
Like 17 minutes of screen time. He is the title character and he's only in this movie but what an impact. We might as well talk about him now.
Yeah, that was my segue. Wasn't it good?
Nice segue. Yeah, smooth. So we get about halfway into the film and suddenly they have to go talk to Beetlejuice. He was pestering them the whole time, like with advertising and like just trying to get into their heads and stuff. But this is the first appearance of Beetlejuice. Oh my God, he's disgusting.
And I'd forgotten this.
He's disgusting.
I was going to ask you that because so my reaction was, you know, he's supposed to be gross. You're supposed to not really like him. Like he's essentially kind of the villain along with the Dietzes. But he was just more pervy gross than I remember.
That was the thing. Like, because I sort of remember him being like Shrek gross, like he farts and he eats bugs and like he's covered in dirt.
Yeah, that's what I remember too.
Like, yeah, he's a gross guy. No, he is such a pervert. My memory had erased that because I'd watched that cartoon show for so long where he's more Shrek gross.
So my memory erased that too. And like, you know, but he's like trying to kiss Gina Davis.
Yeah, he's like a Spanish soccer like suit. He bends her over and kisses her and she's disgusted by it.
Yeah, it was more like over the top pervy than I remember it being. Like he's just this weird horny demon. And you know, there's a whole scene where all of a sudden he's like, what's a guy got to do around here to get some action? And then like a whorehouse shows up in the model. And you find out later that Juno, the caseworker, did that to just distract him. But I was like, oh, great. I mean, you know, those watching with kids, a whorehouse shows up in this. It's very brief and whatever, who cares? We're not going to collect our pearls.
Yeah, there's nothing overtly sexual in it.
But he's gross. Like it's he's not disgusting. The whorehouse. Yeah, it's not the whorehouse. He's the one that's gross. I do think that for kids these days and teenagers these days, they are attuned to perviness more so than maybe we were. I don't know what that says about us. But even my daughter was like, this guy's gross.
Yeah, no, he's just absolute horn dog in a way that like we don't tolerate anymore. But back in the 1980s, it was like, yeah, we need to make the most disgusting character ever. Here's a bunch of disgusting lines and actions and go nuts. And gotta say, Michael Keaton nails it.
He does nail it.
Phenomenal. He is 100% so much enthusiasm in this, like, not like shameless. It's a shameless performance. He just goes crazy in this. It's got a hint of like his next movie, I think, definitely his next movie with Tim Burton is going to be the Batman movie.
Yeah.
That you want to get nuts scene where he's running around with the poker and like trying to fight the Joker. That's Michael Keaton losing his mind. Like this whole movie is Michael Keaton in I've lost my mind territory. And it's so iconic. It's so good.
He commits to the bit. And I definitely think I appreciate that. I think it was good. And when he's supposed to be gross and he's supposed to be over the top and he's the one that's terrorizing the family, you know, and then there's a weird thing where Beetlejuice is like, in order for me to come back permanently, I have to marry you, Lydia, which is like a very pervy statutory rape piece of it. And
yeah,
but
oh, it's, you know, gross.
Even as we declench our pearls that we're wearing, though I'm not wearing it because I'm dressed like Adam, but it works for the movie, but I think it's just a slight miss with kids these days. And what's interesting is in the Broadway show that I saw, so as I mentioned, like in DC, they work out some kinks before they go to Broadway a lot of times. And when I saw it, I was like, wow, Beetlejuice, the character, like he was really great. He had a good voice, but God, he was gross. Like he had like really crude humor. And I was like, oh, I don't remember that, even though that is the character. And apparently, and I don't totally know this because I haven't seen the new I haven't seen it since, but apparently they fixed that. So the crudeness actually didn't work on the stage. And I'm sure he was still crude. I'm sure that's still the case. But I feel like they toned it down on the stage because it just doesn't land these days.
It doesn't. Michael Keaton's just like letting it fly. His performance it's exuberant. He's got so much energy into this. And so it's, even though it was super cringy and I'd forgotten all of that, I still thought he was fantastic as Beetlejuice.
I mean, yes, I totally agree. But I'm actually really curious now that they're doing a Beetlejuice 2, whether they'll make some changes there.
Yeah, no, it's very aggressively perverted.
I think as a kid, he was more integral to the movie. I know it's called Beetlejuice. Then as an adult, I think he actually ended up being. I mean, I think, you know, it's really about the other characters for what makes it a good movie to me.
What's interesting about that, though, is that when they made the TV show, the animated series, and they did the Broadway show, they totally cut out Barbara and Adam, or like reduced their roles. And
they did reduce their roles.
Beetlejuice. Yeah. They sanitized Beetlejuice, but they made more of him and less of the good guys that we're cheering for.
I'm curious what they do for Beetlejuice too, because I didn't realize how much Adam and Barbara, the, you know, Alec Baldwin and Gina Davis characters, really made this movie kind of feel good. I mean, I know that it's dark and it's a Tim Burton, but it feels good. Sort of similar to Edward Scissorhands, going to do another plug for another episode, how the mom character played by Diane Wiest makes it feel good. There are certain characters that do kind of soften the landing for you. So it's not all gross or it's not all pervy or dark. There's other things to latch onto, which I think is what makes these movies pretty good. So I do question the choice of, I mean, obviously you can't necessarily make Alec Baldwin and Geena Davis look like they did when they were in their 20s for this movie. Yeah. But, you know, that is, it provides heart. So in a sequel, it's like, who's going to provide that heart? Is it the Jenna Ortega character? Not to go too deep into like trying to, you know, produce this movie that someone else is producing. But I do think you need to find that heart because Beetlejuice isn't it.
Yeah. He is 17 minutes of this movie. He comes blowing through the door. He's like Kramer on Seinfeld. Like he just explodes into this thing. Oh my God, he is like Kramer. Messes up a ton of stuff and like exits quickly. He's 17 minutes of chaos. And all we remembered as kids, because he was the most like, not endearing, definitely not endearing, but like he's the most memorable part because he's just so explosively chaotic.
You know, it's funny for me, like, I don't think he is the most memorable part. Like, to me, the most memorable part are the other characters are more memorable to me. They're the ones that I was excited to rewatch as an adult. And even for my own kids, I don't think Beetlejuice resonated with them. The movie did, but the character Beetlejuice didn't resonate with them. But the other characters really did, like Lydia and the Dietzes and all of that dynamic they found to be really fun. I mean, it makes it sound like my kids are clutching their pearls, but I think it's just different. It's just different. I mean, I guess I like the silliness of him, but I think my son was like a little bit scared. He's six. He's probably a little too young to be watching this, but oops.
No,
whatever.
I almost said we'll go. Nobody dies, but no, everybody dies in this movie, but in a funny way. One detail I noticed that I absolutely would not have known as a kid, but every time. So this is Danny Elfman's second time scoring a movie, which is wild to think about.
It's a great score.
So it's beautiful. Like the music on it is so good. And every time Beetlejuice comes onto the screen or is about to come onto the screen, they play the first few notes, the eerie violin from the Danse Macabre, which is like a very famous orchestra piece.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just so slight, but yeah, it's just like, ooh, Danse Macabre. And then they cut to Beetlejuice doing whatever silly thing he's about to do. So some of the other characters who pop up, they've got Juno, who's the caseworker.
I loved her.
Of the afterlife.
So good.
She is so good. So this is Sylvia Sidney. She is an Academy Award nominated actress, but she, by the time this movie's being filmed, she is one of the sassy older ladies of the 1980s. Which reminds me of like Sophia from the Golden Girls.
Definitely reminded me of her.
There was just a bunch of wise, cracking older women in our lives in the 1980s.
Totally.
Who just like that was a type in all of these films and television shows. She's awesome. Like she's just chain smoking her cigarettes and like rolling her eyes at them and calling them ignorant.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. She's admonishing them. She's basically calling, by them we mean Adam and Barbara, Alec Baldwin and Geena Davis. She's calling them terrible ghosts. They got to handle it themselves. There's all this assumption that they should know the bureaucracy of death, and they have no fucking idea what's going on.
Everybody in the afterlife is like, didn't you read the handbook?
I know, that's such a thing.
The way they're describing the handbook. Apparently it was written to sound like VCR instructions from the 1980s.
Which is funny.
Like that it was just dry and impenetrable. And wait, you have to do what to set the clock? Like that they're trying to read through this thing and it's just not sinking in at all because it's written so obtusely.
Her impatience for them and her impatience for the football team that shows up dead. Like, I don't know if we survived the crash. And she's like, I don't have fucking time for you. Like she.
Yeah, she's just like, you think? And, like, you know, super sassy.
When she's smoking, the smoke comes out of the slit in her neck, which as a kid really creeped me out. And then as an adult, I was like, oh shit, but she committed suicide by clearly slitting her own throat.
Now we know the suicide people become bureaucrats in this afterlife.
Yeah, she complains about her paperwork. She complains about her workload. I love her.
She is such a good archetype of sassy older lady and civil servant. You ran into her in the DMV.
She had no
time for your BS.
She's like essence of principal voice. Like she's just, yeah.
Oh, yeah. All right. So like other fun things about this movie are just the fact that it's like, you know, we're seeing like fledgling Tim Burton really find himself here.
I think,
you
know, he absolutely finds himself here.
I feel like this is the first real Tim Burton movie, and we're going to go on to have our childhoods so influenced by this whole aesthetic, but like, this is the beginning of it, everyone. So I really love that. There's just so many like weird cinematic things they're tucking in here. And there's one moment where it doesn't really come through as well when you're watching it on your TV at home, but there's a shot when Barbara and Adam are sitting in Juno's office and there's a window of a movie theater behind them. And there are dead people staring through the window.
I didn't notice
directly.
That.
I noticed it because it was just like, why is there a movie theater like in her office or behind her office? Yeah. Or what's happening here? Everyone who's sitting in that audience is watching the people watching the movie. And it's supposed to be the effect of dead people in a movie theater watching the real movie theater watch Beetlejuice.
Oh, my God.
So like little details like that, I was just like, oh, that's so cool. Like, I'm nerding out over the practical effects that they're doing
but,
here.
You know, on the practical effects, I will say this is a win for practical effects. Get another one. And yeah. Maybe it's because I'm like, get off my lawn kind of old person here. But it does work in this movie. And I'll even say watching with my kids, like, I think CGI would ruin it. I mean, the sandworms.
Oh, God, yeah.
And all the things with Beetlejuice. You don't always see his face when he turns into things. It's all practical effects. And it lends a realness that works because it's not really quite supposed to scare you.
I'm so with you.
CGI would have made this scarier. And I don't think you needed it to make it scarier. I think it was just the right level of slightly scary for younger kids, slightly creepy for older kids. And that's exactly the level you wanted to hit. And only practical effects could get you there. So I do think it's a big win for, I mean, like as if you needed a big win in the 80s. It's not like they had an option of CGI, but that's...
No, a lot of stop motion. That was like as cool as it got.
I enjoy seeing it work still with kids when you don't need the whole shebang.
I love when you have to get really creative to figure out how we're going to get a shot on something and like reading and deconstructing like how they did that. Like even just such a minor thing, but the moment where Barbara's like, I don't think we survived the crash and takes them over to the mirror and they're like holding up objects.
Yeah, they don't
and they
see,
can't
their
see their reflections.
Yeah.
That's not done in a mirror. That is the two of them standing through an empty window looking onto the set through the hole in the wall. It looks like a reflection, but like that's the set of the living room on the other side of the hole in the wall. And there's puppeteers moving the objects.
Oh, that's fun.
And they're just walking their hands around with like the same objects. And it's just so much more creative when you got to figure out how to do it practically.
Yeah, I love it. Yeah.
We're both on board for like old school practical effects.
Honestly, kids are on board for it too. They like it. They don't notice that CGI isn't there. They really don't. They don't need it.
So we love to talk about cringy things and then awesome things as well. And we've already gotten a little bit into the cringy behavior of Beetlejuice. But anything else that kind of made you pause when watching this?
I think the big things for me were Beetlejuice was extra gross and the suicide fascination. Those were the things, they're not cringy. They're just sort of not modern.
For me, I discovered that a lot of things in the afterlife were actually references to real world tragedies.
Oh,
and
God.
I don't know how I feel about that. So apparently when they go into the waiting room of the afterlife for the first scene, there's something over the PA system that's like flight 409 now arriving at gate 3. And that's an actual airline crash. And like not the one with the football team, but I think the football team is a loose reference to the Marshall football team that died in a plane crash. So yeah, I don't know if that's like a relic from the original script, or also a lot of these tragedies were decades before they made this movie. Mm-hmm. So maybe it's not too soon, but at the same time, I was just like, whoa, that's a little dark, guys. I'm not going to knock this movie on that, but like, I just kind of wish I hadn't read all of that.
I don't think that hits the radar of kids.
But anyway, we're dwelling on the cup half empty stuff. What about what's totally awesome?
I'm impressed with how many genres the movie covers. I mean, it's comedy, it's goth, it's I wouldn't say horror, but there's, you know, there's Halloween spooky and you have teenage angst, and they did it all well.
And you have Calypso music.
And you have Calypso music. And it's all done really well. And I think kids pick up on all of those things. They laugh at the same moments. They recognize the teen angst. So it's still there. It's sort of timeless in that way. So the only thing that's dated is Beetlejuice himself. But the rest of the movie makes it sort of still feel like it could be produced today.
All right. My closing thought is Beetlejuice 2. Apparently my high school classmate, BJ Novak, said, why didn't they call it Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice?
Oh my God, that would have been amazing. Leave yourself open for a third movie. Oh, genius.
Exactly. Guys, not too late. That movie doesn't officially have a title yet. Do it. Do it.
Here's a plug, Hollywood. You heard it here first. Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice. That would be so good.
Perfect. Yeah. Perfect sequel.
All right. So let's move on to ratings in case folks are new to us or don't remember. So it's a rating scale of 1 to 10, 1 being garbage, 10 being Princess Bride. We will do the review, the scoring of adults and how it rates for kids today. And then we will rate whether it lives up or not. It's just a thumbs up or a thumbs down. We both have to agree. So adult rating, what you got for me, Amanda?
I'm going to go 7.5.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I'm pretty close to you and you and I don't. I mean, we have not agreed lately. We have had a lot of disagreement.
We really haven't.
Yeah, I'm going a 7. So I don't think I need to. I know. I don't think I need to see it again, but I really enjoyed this viewing. I think the reason why I went as, let's say, as low as a 7 is just because of like Beetlejuice kind of irritating me.
He's gross.
So Amanda's the order Muppet and has a spreadsheet. So you're keeping us honest here. So that's a 14.5. For adult rating.
It is. Does this movie live up for kids today with modern sensitivities about, hey, you shouldn't just bend a woman over and kiss her uninvited, Spanish stalker?
So for the kids rating, same rating, 1 being garbage, 10 being Princess Bride. I gave this also a 7. So I was 7s for both. I'd say the reason why it wasn't higher than a 7 is probably because Beetlejuice himself didn't land as much, but it still was great for kids and even tweens, like because I have a tween.
All right. Well, I'm going to actually do the same exact adult rating for the kids and give it a 7.5.
Oh, a 7.5. We're in agreement, though. This is crazy.
We are. We're very close on this one. Yeah, I just remember as a kid being a little scared of this movie, but then once it started up, just being delighted by it. This is a good movie.
So what's our total?
We are at 29. Oh, that's which
pretty
is
high for us.
One of our highest. It's tied with The Muppet Movie and Hook, which you skewed significantly.
I had to skew it high.
It's slightly behind Edward Scissorhands, another Tim Burton classic, by 0.5.
Hmm.
And then it's behind our all-time highest is still Beauty and the Beast.
Yeah, this feels right. So the last question is whether we deem it to live up, and you and I both have to agree. Does it live up, regardless of score? I'm in a solid yes camp. I really had a good time rewatching it, and I'm looking forward to the sequel.
I also solidly yes. Yeah,
we agree.
We haven't had a yes in a while.
We haven't agreed in a while, and we keep tanking each other's movies that we love. So I'm super excited.
We do. Yeah. You're a winner.
You're a winner, Beetlejuice. And you know we agree, but perhaps listeners don't, or they do. So either way, if you could come, let us know what you think at LiveUpPod on all the socials or at LiveUpPod@gmail.com. Let us know what you think. What did we get wrong? Were we too pearl clutchy? Let us know. We love listener feedback, except if you're going to troll us and say that women suck, then fuck you. But anyway, other than that, please let us know what you think. Thanks for listening.